Matthew 10:34 through 36. Don't think that I came to send peace on the earth. I didn't come to send peace, but a sword. For I came to set a man at odds against his father, and a man against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's foes will be those of his own household. The first thing we need to talk about here is, how do we approach the Bible? How do we interpret the Bible? Because I got into a really lengthy debate with somebody who's an atheist, and he brought up, it was either this portion or something very similar in Luke, how can you say he's a Messiah of peace? Look what he says here, right? And so if this were the only verse in the Bible, if we had a one-verse Bible, and it said, don't think that I came to send peace on the earth, I didn't come to send peace, but a sword, that would be a fair accusation, right? But we have so much of Yeshua's teachings, so much of the rest of the Bible that leads up to him and that looks back to him, that we have to say, what is he saying here? What we have to translate this and understand this in context, okay, in context. So he's speaking here a little tongue-in-cheek, right? That's the way language works. Nobody speaks, and nobody should speak, absolutely literally all the time, right? In fact, what I just said couldn't possibly be literally true, because I said all the time. That means you never sleep, you're always talking, you don't take a breath, right? So the language just doesn't work that way. And too many people look at the Bible and they think, first of all, it's all, they read it all like it's a list of facts, as if it were all a history book, right? That there's no sarcasm. There's sarcasm in the Bible. Okay, Paul gets sarcastic sometimes. Just listening to my audio Bible on 1 Corinthians, and the reader says some of it in a very sarcastic tone of voice, and he should. Some of it's sarcastic. The Bible's sometimes sarcastic. The Bible's sometimes tongue-in-cheek. The Bible's sometimes poetic, right? Some people take a verse in Isaiah or something that says the earth shall tremble and shake, and then they say, oh, there was that huge earthquake and the earth came off its axis just a little bit, and that's what it's talking about. That's not what it's talking about in Isaiah. It's talking about being in dread before the Lord, you know. So we have to be careful when we're interpreting the Bible. Is it in context? And first of all, and second of all, what kind of speech is it? What is this? Factual speech? If this were factual speech, it wouldn't make sense with the rest of Yeshua's sayings, right? Matthew 5:9 in the Beatitudes, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Okay? Romans 12:16-19. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Repay no one evil for evil. Give thought to what is good in the eyes of all people. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live in shalom, live in peace with all people. This is the teaching of Yeshua, okay? And the context here is not, he's saying, go out and kill people. I didn't come to send peace on the earth, or I didn't come to send peace, but a sword. What he's saying here is not literal. What he's saying here is, my presence here is going to bring a sword, okay? Right. Yeah. The context is, brother will betray brother. You're going to be, don't you do the betraying, right? Don't you turn your brother in. Don't you turn your father in. They're going to turn you in, okay? The families are going to split apart because of me. Societies may even split apart because of me. And if he is the fulcrum on which history turns, then that's normal. Greater than your family is Yeshua, mm-hmm. Right? Yes. If every family stuck together after somebody comes to faith, We'd have to say, how important is that faith, right? If a family who vehemently opposes Yeshua, and somebody in their family, say a Muslim family or an Orthodox Jewish family, somebody in that family receives Yeshua, there's going to be rejection there because this is a major issue, mm-hmm. right? And even think about within Judaism, okay? Within Judaism, within Orthodox Judaism, and even outside of Orthodox Judaism, even in a lot of conservative Judaism and a lot of Reform Jews, not all of them, but a lot of them, they say that you can pretty much be whatever you want and still be Jewish except believe in Yeshua. As soon as you believe in Yeshua, bam, you're not. Mm-hmm. You could be a Buddhist and still be Jewish. I'm not saying this is what every Jewish rabbi thinks, but a lot of Jewish rabbis and practicing religious Jews think this. I can accept you. You're a Jewish Buddhist. Okay. You're a Jewish atheist. I think I can accept that, I guess. I'm not crazy about it, but okay. But no, you believe in Yeshua, bam.
You're cut off.
You're cut off. Mm-hmm. Because he's so important, first of all. Second of all, there's a lot of negative history there coming from the church. So that issue is a little clouded. But he is coming in and he's saying, I'm more important than your father, than your mother, than your mm-hmm. child. Be willing to undergo their rejection for me. Okay? And so... another thing this passage does then is it gets us to understand that he cannot be, as many others have pointed out, he cannot be just a good man, a good teacher, a moral teacher, a great rabbi, a prophet even. If he sets himself up as more important than your children and your parents, right? If he sets you up as, he sets himself up as somebody worth giving your life for. Mm-hmm. He doesn't say die for God. He doesn't say die for the Torah. He says be willing to die for me. Then this man is either who he says he is or he's crazy, right? C.S. Lewis makes that point, mm-hmm. right? He's either who he says he is or he's crazy. And there's nothing in his teachings, his great, marvelous, pure, righteous teachings that would make us think he's crazy, right? Mm-hmm. He is who he says he is. He is God come down to earth, and so therefore, he's worth losing even your family over.
Yeah, he is.
It's worth losing our life over.
Yeah. Worth losing our life over. Absolutely.
I don't care how many people think I'm crazy because of my zeal.
Well, you know, I think it's funny, kind of funny, but I used to have a big time drug problem, and I thought it was really telling when I became, you know, I got through that and telling people about Jesus.
Yeah.
And they accepted me more when I was a drug addict.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
I mean, that's a supernatural. You can just look on their face, you start talking about Jesus.
Right. Right.
I mean, it's yeah. supernatural, man. That makes sense.
Right. Oh yeah. There's been Jewish people that have been heavy drug addicts and living a wayward life. They accept Yeshua. And their life gets cleaned up, but their family can't take it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like you were saying, they don't give any credit to Yeshua for cleaning this person up. They're just take them down to the rabbi, have the rabbi talk them out of it. And
my family are still like that.
My family. I came from a wonderful family. And my mom received the Lord, and it was starting to pull the family apart. And from what I've heard, I wasn't around at the time. Or I guess I was, but I was a baby. So my grandfather just said, enough, this is not going to tear the family apart. So he was a very peaceful, honorable man. But a lot of families, it tears them apart.
Yeah,
a lot of Jewish
does.
Families.
So is it more, see, this is what I'm curious about, because yeah. being a Gentile, is it much, much more in a Jewish family, is that really, like, frowned down on?
Oh, yeah, like, most Jewish families. Yeah.
Because okay. in partisan stuff, it's not, you know,
yeah.
it's not as, you know, but my friends were secular, so.
Right, right. Yeah, Jewish families.
I'm going to speak for myself, uh-huh. but from a lot of the testimonies that I've listened to and been witness to, most Jews that I've watched have come from an Orthodox background and lived a secular life because you lose, as years go by, you lose the rabbinical and the man-made traditions, and you just go off into your own thing. Mm. And
right. Right, yeah. So, in this passage here, he makes it clear there's going to be rough times, right? First, Matthew 9, 14 through 17, when we talked about this passage before.
Matthew 9, what?
9, 14 and following.
Okay.
Then John's disciples came to him, saying, "Why do we and the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast?" And Yeshua said to them, "The guests of the bridegroom cannot mourn until the bridegroom is with them, can they? But the days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them, and then they will fast. And no one puts a patch of unshrunk cloth on an old garment, for the patch pulls away from the garment, and a worse tear happens. Nor do they put new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise the skins burst, and the wine spills out, and the skins are ruined. But they put new wine into fresh wineskins, and both are preserved." In both of these passages, I believe he's trying to get them to understand his role as Messiah. Okay? You have a vision, and this is clear in the scriptures. You have a vision that Messiah is going to come in, take up the throne, throw off Roman rule, set up a kingdom of peace. Okay? And so this passage has got to be rubbing them funny. Wait a second. Right, because James and John, right, their mother goes to Yeshua, "Grant that this son sits on your, one son sits on your right hand." And, so they want to rule and reign with Yeshua, and he's coming in and he's throwing a wrench into that whole thought process. Wait a second, that's not the way it's going to work here. Be prepared for the sword. Be prepared to take up your cross. Be prepared to be rejected by your family. Understand, you've got to stretch. You've got to be a new wineskin that gets rid of the old idea of Messiah, okay, and takes on the new idea of Messiah. Quite frankly, it's a deeper idea of the Messiah that Yeshua is presenting here. It's not just one of persecution, but it's a Messiah that one is willing to be persecuted for because the love is so great and the love is so deep, right? The old Messiah, the main thing wasn't about the Messiah. The main thing was about that kingdom of peace, right? The Messiah is there to serve the kingdom. Here, no, this is about a Messiah that loves me enough to give his life and that I love enough to give my life. That's a deep Messiah that I'm going to connect with in the deepest parts of my life and not just be about, oh, let's throw off Roman rule, right? No, let's hone our love through persecution. Let's become deeply in love with this Messiah.